way to ignite wood and paper cities. This was deliberate, intentional. This was a matter of policy. Probably 500,000 Japanese were burned alive in a process of sin that they too would understand that what we say goes. And back to the liberation of the Philippines from the Spanish Empire to make it an American colony and the deaths of 600,000 to 1.5 million so-called Moros, a pejorative term. Tagalog speakers called the Indians of the Philippines. Entire provinces deliberately cleared a population by virtue of liquidating them. Orders signed by American military leadership to kill every single male over 10 years of age. Oh yeah, they didn't teach you that in high school history, did they? And Bill Owens doesn't want you taught about that now. And that happened 10 years after Wounded Knee. And the reconstituted 7th Cavalry and the Hotchkiss guns and disarmed and immobilized people butchered in the snow and dumped into a mass grave. And I actually used the imagery from Wounded Knee in a book on comparative genocide, juxtaposing the dumping of the bodies into the mass grave at Wounded Knee and the dumping of the bodies into mass graves by the Einsatz group and in Eastern Europe. And people sometimes get them confused, which is which. The symbolism and the reality are fused. The reality is what's at issue. And taking that string of massacres, running all the way back to when a group of people now known as the Wappinger, who supposedly sold Manhattan Island to the Dutch for a handful of glass beads and trinkets, objected to the idea that they'd sold their land because what they understood they did was accept rental payment for use of a particular portion of Manhattan Island as a trading center which they could do business with the Dutch. And the Dutch, who knew fully well that this had not been a sale but rather a rental, resolved the issue by sending a military expedition up the island to dispense with the Wappingers, doing so rapidly that they felt that no one would believe how successful they'd been when they went back. So they took the heads of the fighting age males and the leadership and carried them back in woven baskets to display, to make proof of the fact that they had butchered the lot. And the citizenry was so happy they gathered round to watch a jolly sporting contest, kickball, in which the heads of the slain owners of the land were used as the ball. Roughly on a place where the foundation of the World Trade Center was situated. That's the history of the place, which sits approximately at the end of Wall Street. We know about Wall Street in terms of its economic importance, its influence, its symbolic value. What most of us don't know is it takes its name from the wall of the slave enclosure, which formed the economy of the city, which is now considered the economic hub of empire. That's the history, and those ghosts, those transatlantic ghosts, were there too. And the Chinese that laid the track on the railroad and did the deep shaft mining, who had not a Chinaman's chance of surviving, yeah, that's where that term comes from. Oh yeah, they were all there. There was a load of karma due. And what I said was, when you treat people this way, when you kill their babies as a matter of course and say it has no consequence, when you devalue, demean, and degrade others to this point, naturally and inevitably, what you're putting out will blow back on you, and that's what happened on that day. And the question was on everybody's lips as they whined innocent American as if they fused it into all one word. If we're American by definition, we're innocent. No matter what it is we do in the world, what we embrace, what the consequences are, we're Americans, we're innocent. We're consequential, they're valueless. Get the symmetry straight. How do we keep ourselves safe from this sort of thing coming back? Oh, how could they do this? They hate our freedom. They're evil. tiger cages in Guantanamo Bay, licensing of torture techniques, which we have Harvard constitutional lawyers now arguing should be permissible, the cloning of more and more Delta units, commando teams, assassination squads, counterterrorism, wanding of people. They wanted me apparently to see that I wouldn't commit suicide while standing at the podium tonight. And actually, I've got my .357 terrorism weapon right here in my belt for all the good it did. Impounding my tweezers did not save anyone. Who heard the last time an aircraft was kidnapped by a terrorist using tweezers plucking the eyebrows of a frantic stewardess? In order to, I mean, that's the level of insanity we are. When you get serious about security, and in some aspects of it are security, you think that's going to work against people who are embittered and hate you for the very good reason that you're butchering their children with presumed impunity? Ask the Israelis. They've got the most highly perfected and developed security state on the planet, and you got 14-year-old kids walking in there with bundles of dynamite and blowing them right out of cafes. You want to put your well-being and that of your children on a system and a structure to set of priorities like that? Go ahead, but count me and mine out, okay? If you want to be secure, if you want to be able to live a human life in all of its full dimension, if you want to have the security of that to pass it along to your children, if you want to be valued, in other words, as a human being, I don't want to get biblical here, but do unto others as you would expect to have done unto yourself. That's my first proposition. If you want to be secure from that natural and inevitable response to what it is America's putting out in the world, start with stopping killing of their babies. Yeah. Accord them the fundamental dignity of being human, not collateral damage. And America's been able to provide the world with an endless stream of glowing rhetoric, but how on that basis, since they violated all of it, since they've always said one thing and acted precisely the opposite, is anyone out there going to believe anyone here if those assurances are made? Here's my real crushing blow. This is the radical finale of the whole thing. Let's just try pretending for a moment that the United States of America, like every other entity on the planet, is bound to obey the law. Bare bones. I can flesh it out in Q&A. I'm not the Board of Regents. We will have interchange. You will not be arrested for attempting to engage in it. But understand, since that is what it was that I had to say, and I had every right, indeed the obligation, not only as a citizen, but under the terms of my contract and as a human being, I'm not backing up an inch. I owe no one apology. Clarification. Clarification is one thing, that's my job too. Apology is another. But those who have been trying to elicit that in some cases, I think, have simply been asking the wrong question, wanting to know if I experienced sorrow or mourning, something like that with regard to the children who died on the aircraft and in the buildings of 911 that day. And the answer is yes, of course. And for the firefighters, and for the food service workers, and for the broom pushers, and for the random passersby, yeah. I do. And it's absolute, it's unequivocal, and it's not one whit more proportionately significant than the mourning, the sorrow I experience for every single one of those Iraqi children, for every single one of those Palestinian children. None of whom have been mentioned in the criticism in any way at all. It's a one-track record leading back to the 9-1-1 victims and nothing else. I even had an Air Force colonel tell me about the last group of people who were in a civilian-occupied facility, meaning the hijackers on 9-1-1. Afghanistan and Iraq either didn't happen or the people there weren't. I can show you that email. And he meant it seriously. He did not mean it maliciously. That is the genocidal mentality. That is the core of the problem. When I start hearing equal sorrow for those brown-skinned others out there dying in the millions, maybe we're getting to some place where all the children will be safe and all the people will be safe. And I learned from where I am. I am not Cheyenne, but this is Cheyenne land. And I've been there here as long as many of you have been alive. And I learned something about their ways. It's about the picket pin or stake. Sometimes you stand out because there's attack coming. And you stake yourself to the ground so you can't get out. You can't retreat. That's your statement. It comes with red paint. Well, there's no red paint here, literally, but see it now. I drove my picket stake. My picket pin is in. I'm staked out. There is not an inch of give in this. Not at this level of whether I get to speak, what I say when I speak, or what the function of this institution is. All right? This institution needs to be protected from the ravages of the rabid right wing, but it has to be protected on grounds that save the institution itself. With that, I think we got commonality, we got solidarity, we got everything we need to prevail and keep this institution what it is that it's supposed to be and actually to improve it. We can, what kills you, what doesn't kill you, they say, gives you strength. We come out of this stronger and clearer about what our institutional mission and our rights are than we went in the first place. And on that score, we ought to be thanking O'Reilly, we ought to be thanking Joe Scarborough, we ought to be thanking Kevin Flynn, we ought to be thanking the yo-yos in the local paper, and we ought to be thanking the Board of Regents and Governor Owens as well. But thank God.